Session number 12389, Mrs. Eldora Spiegelberg, Reel 3.
Spiegelberg, Reel 3. Well, I was talking about the period between the First and Second World Wars and what the Women's International League was doing at that time. They established a hostel in Austria for refugees, refugee children, and they circulated petitions at one point, I believe 5 million or 6 million petitions were filled in which they tried to prevent the entry into the Second World War. But, of course, we're unable to do this. And the period of the Second World War was particularly difficult because who could not want Hitler to be conquered? And many of our members were Jewish and felt very strongly about this. They, as I said, the organization itself was not a pacifist organization. We did not demand that a member be a pacifist to join. And so I understand that we lost about two-thirds of our members during the Second World War in the United States. And in the rest of the world, some of the sections were completely wiped out, and many of our greatest leaders, women themselves, were sent to concentration camps in Europe and died. And it was a terrible period for them as well as for all other people trying to end war. So Jane Addams was given the Nobel Peace Prize, as was Emily Green Balch, who was our second international president. She was a Quaker professor. But Jane died in 1932, I think it was. Wait a minute. 1934, because I actually saw her as a freshman in college. I visited Hull House and was able to shake her hand, and she died a couple of years later. but they, after the war, things picked up again, and our league rebuilt itself in the rest of Europe. The strongest section was in Denmark, the Netherlands, where it had never lost its members, and a very strong section formed in Japan after the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And that section has remained very strong, and one of our international congresses was held in Tokyo in the 1980s. And we have held congresses in many parts of the world. In this year, it's going to be this summer in Bolivia, which is a new region. We've never been in the southern hemisphere before. We have now taken on as our main areas of work, besides disarmament, which remains our prime focus, undoing racism, which we feel is a very important thing all over the world, and of course in the United States, trying to prevent United States intervention in foreign countries. Trying to work for women's equality, what you might call it undoing sexism also. And these are our main platform objectives, which we just reaffirmed this June at Bryn Mawr at our national convention. We've started again to attract a lot of young women, and this is partly because of the Gulf War. We had a real resurgence of membership during the Gulf War and afterwards. Women would call in all different cities and say, what can we do? What are you women doing about the Gulf War, and we're against it, and we feel we're isolated in our community, and we need to have the support of other women. And so it's been a real membership boon, bad as the war itself has been.
You're president. Am I right in thinking that at the moment?
I'm president here, yes.
In the St. Louis?
St. Louis branch. Mm.
Yes. What does that involve for you, being a president?
Oh, it involves endless serving on committees and making phone calls and presiding at executive meetings and board meetings and being present at any events that we put on, such as community forums about these different areas. And I guess whatever goes on, I have to be pretty much involved in it, whether it's leafleting against war toys right now around Christmas time, or arranging discussion groups on socialism and democracy, which is a topic that the European sections have been particularly eager that we pursue since the fall of the Berlin Wall and the fear that the former communist states are simply throwing the baby out with the bath by getting rid of the good parts of socialism along with the bad ones. And we're trying to explore the possibilities of combining democracy with socialism in the best possible way. And this is called the Women's Vision Program. And we're also, of course, continuing our forums on undoing sexism. And there's no problem about working against United States intervention, because we're intervening everywhere around the world, Nicaragua, everywhere that we're very afraid that there's going to be a real invasion of Cuba. There certainly has been one of Panama and so on. So we have plenty of things to think about and work against. And the Gulf War is one in which we have joined a large coalition here in St. Louis, which was first the Forum Against War in the Persian Gulf. And then after war happened and ended, we decided to continue and call ourselves the Forum for a Just Peace. And we have had meetings practically every week, sometimes every other week, to plan further actions and activities, mostly educational. We have a very wide program of going into schools, churches, and organizations with videos about the Gulf War. And we're talking with people, raising questions, getting them to look at the causes, conduct, and hopefully the cure for what happened in the Persian Gulf. And we're not trying to confront people. We're trying to get them to think and to explore and to question. And we've been pretty successful so far, and I think we've already spoken to something like 50 different groups in the community, and we plan now as we feel that we can't divorce our interest in the victims of the Persian Gulf War, the people of Iraq particularly, from our concern for the victims of violence in our own city streets right here in St. Louis. We're experiencing a real epidemic of violence and homicide. The number of murders has almost doubled since last year. And so we had a meeting at which the Forum for a Just Peace decided that it would also work on this immediate problem in our neighborhoods. One thing we do is to join prayer vigils at the site of every murder. There was one this morning at 9, which I couldn't join because I'm here. But we feel that by praying in a group with blacks and whites together, ministers and citizens of all denominations, including Islamic and Jewish groups, that we can at least show our deep concern for the victims and even for those who have committed these murders. We are trying to work on concrete problems. The greatest problem is creating jobs for young Afro-Americans in the inner city. The joblessness there is around 80%, and these young men have no way to get any economic security. They see dealing in drugs as a quick way of making a lot of money, which it is, but of course it also gets them involved with the police and with shooting gangs and so on. So we are working on trying to find jobs for them. We're also trying to greatly increase the recreational opportunities of young people in the teenage of the cities, both men and women, instead of, of course, another main interest is in seeing that treatment centers are adequate to the need of the people. We hear that nationwide, 3 million women are not able to get treatment for their drug addiction, and a lot of them are pregnant, and their children are being born addicted already to crack, and these children already from birth have practically no hope for normal development. And this is a nationwide scourge which we are experiencing in St. Louis, as every city is. And so we're committed to working in these areas and doing something about it.
It's very interesting, I think, isn't it, how your interests from your group seem to go from war, you know, internationally, globally, to this sort of violence and deprivation at local level. Do you see it all as part and parcel of the same thing, Eldora?
Yes, we do. That's why we're doing this, because we can't separate what's happening here locally from what's happening internationally. The violence, the society of violence, the increase in acceptability of solving international problems by the kind of thing that the Gulf War was, makes it much more easy, we think, for people at the local level to resort to violence also. And though maybe there's no way of correlating the great rise in violence here to that, we're sure that there is a correlation. Whether the research has disclosed it yet or not, we don't know. So I guess we always talk about peace, and there are three areas of peace. There's inner peace, but if we waited till everybody became good and peaceful and loving in their own souls, we would never get even a modicum of international peace. So we also have to have peace as the opposite of war. And to do this, I think many of us are convinced that the government under law has to be extended, and this has to become universal. There has to be an international government far stronger than the present United Nations on a federal level, where all states belong to it and are given autonomy as far as running their internal affairs are concerned, but are not allowed to have an army which can try to solve their problems with their neighbor states by invading and shooting any more than we in the United States would solve our water problems on the Colorado River, let's say, by declaring war between California and Colorado. So we're just, all these things are interrelated, and there are so many ways of thinking about peace, and I think people are very confused, some believing that all they need to do is visualize peace and dream about it and and live peaceful lives themselves, and that somehow this will spread peace internationally, and not understanding that worthy as that goal is, and we need all of these kinds of peace, but we also need to work on the international level towards government by law instead of by force.
Thank you. Yes, I wonder, while you were telling me about your vigils in these areas where homicides and other violent acts had occurred, some of these areas in St. Louis, because I've been there myself, I imagine would be very sort of dangerous areas. Is that right?
Well, yeah, I guess so, because these murders happen in neighborhoods of high crime, mostly on the north side of St. Louis, which is practically all black, but also increasingly on the south side. And we understand that there's a lot of this goes on in the county, but is simply not reported, and that underplaying the prevalence of shootings and so on in the county is a disservice, because we need to realize that no one is immune and that this isn't us versus them, but that all of us are at risk as long as these things go on. So, yes, I have not felt that there is danger in attending the prayer vigils, but I go to every part of the city. I drive in my little car wherever anything is happening that I want to participate in, and I simply refuse to stay away because someone says, well, that's a dangerous part of the city to be in. I think we can really limit our activities far too much by this kind of timidity, and add to the isolation of the groups that are at risk. These poor people can't move out of their neighborhoods. They'd like to, heaven knows. But if none of us ever visit them or go where they are, then they really feel isolated.
Could I now go back to the Gulf War? Because, you know, this is something which interests us very much. And, you described so well the Vietnam War, and I think it would be very interesting to compare the two. You were saying at the beginning of Vietnam how, first of all, it was assumed that the Americans were there sort of advising, and how it was rather a delayed realization that it was going to be a military action. With the Gulf War, you know, how well aware were you in the beginning that this was heading for war, would you say, when the invasion of Kuwait had occurred, you know, after, what was that, August the 2nd?
Yes. Well, it happened so quickly that we were almost overcome by the fact that within days, was it, or a week or two of the invasion of Kuwait by Iraq, already thousands of troops were being ordered to the Gulf. And we couldn't understand, we couldn't believe that the president had the right or authority to do this, but nobody. And so what we did at first was concentrate on our elected officials and try to get them to pass resolutions in Congress to stop this. And at first it looked very hopeful. And they did actually pass some resolutions, and it looked as if they would really stand up to the president and stop the thing before it started. But then they all caved in, and it became unpopular or almost unpatriotic to voice opposition to what was going on. So, as you know, half a million troops found their way there, and of course, we in the peace movement, our analysts and so on, began telling us that the airstrips on which they were landing had all been laid there as if just to help the Saudi Arabians, but they were really planned so that they were all ready for massive troop landings. And before we knew it, the whole thing seemed to just take sort of an inexorable course. And unlike the time of the Vietnam War, when, as I described, we had nightly descriptions of what was going on by very reputable journalists whom we trusted and who had been great during peacetime, so we knew that they would be telling us the truth in the war. As you know, they formed these pools, and they only allowed them to go in large groups, which they said was necessary because you simply couldn't let a bunch of people off into the desert. and then they carefully monitored who spoke with them. And it was like some kind of press conferences every night at which the right questions were asked and the acceptable information was handed out. And we saw absolutely nothing about the people involved in the Gulf War. We see these screens with precision instruments and sightings, and then we'd be told about the surgical strikes and this wonderful way that now this war could be waged so humanely because it would just avoid hitting people, but just infrastructures and so on and so on. Well, those of us in the peace movement, of course, didn't believe this, and very soon we were getting our own kind of information from peace groups that went over there and stayed at the borders or wherever they could at great risk to themselves and were reporting about what was actually happening to the people. And Women's International League joined with a group of women under Mrs. Papandreou of Greece. A group of them went, and they met with the Iraqi Women's Peace Organization, and they traveled to Jordan and to Lebanon, and they tried to meet with, they wanted to meet with Saddam Hussein, but they only met with his ministers and so on. And all these things, we kept hoping against hope that war itself would that somehow it wouldn't become a complete war, but of course it did. And then when that bunker in Baghdad was hit, where all these people were hiding from the bombs, and it was supposed to have been something else, and our government refused to admit that hundreds of people were killed in that attack, our anger rose more and more, and we were just appalled at the whole thing. We held rallies and demonstrations as long as we could, when war actually was declared, and we couldn't demonstrate anymore publicly, but we worked very hard on